So there we go. Co-chairs, you may call the meeting to order. Miranda?
I move to call the meeting to order.
And I second the motion.
Thanks. Zoom reminders. I feel like a broken record, but so no use of chat for substantive comments. Try to keep your camera on if you can. Raise your hand if you want to speak. We pick on the members first before observers. Time permitting, we get observer comments at any point during the agenda. We do have a call to the audience agenda item now, so observers may have that chance. And I think those are the main things. So approve past meeting notes. Is there, first of all, are there any corrections on last month's meeting notes? Okay, so we assume that they are good as is. Co-chairs, if you want to move to approve the past meeting notes. Sophia.
Yes, I move to approve the past meeting notes.
And I second.
Great. And now Patrick will review the agenda.
Good evening, everyone. Thank you for joining us and welcome to the March meeting of the Complete Streets Coordinating Council. We've got a pretty full agenda, an eventful agenda, a couple action items lined up for you all for discussion and decisions tonight. So Gabriella will be presenting on the recommendations for the selected projects for the Proposition 411 Neighborhood Safe Streets program. So they've gone through a pretty extensive process over the last couple of months, received 50 plus applications, and now we'll be making a recommendation back to this commission based on the parameters that you've established on kind of what would be recommended to move forward for funding and installation. We'll be seeking a funding recommendation. We'll be seeking a funding authorization on a recommendation to layer in safety improvements on Silverbell Road. It is a Proposition 101 project that's currently in active repaving, and we have an opportunity, if we move quickly, to install some complementary safety improvements as part of that project. Then Jonathan will be joining us from Pima County, also an esteemed member of our committee, to give us an overview of what's happening on West Valencia Road, which the county was, very fortunately in the last cycle, awarded a $20 million federal raise grant for. So he'll give us an update on that and talk about some design discussions. And then finally, it is time for our co-chair rotation. I think at the last meeting, we brought that up and we're looking to see if anybody else was interested. Marshall did indicate his interest in potentially stepping up to be a co-chair of the committee. So we'll have part of that discussion. And then our regular stuff, calls to the audience, updates, and everything else. So with that, Tani, back to you.
Okay, excellent. So, welcome to anybody who just joined. If you can put an O in front of your name and rename, you can put your affiliation in there as well. If you're an observer, M for member, S for City of Tucson staff. So, the next item is the call to the audience. Are there audience members that are going to want to speak? If you can raise your hand. Kylie, anyone else? Okay, so I just have to read this, Kylie. Sorry. We limited to 3 minutes per speaker for a total of 10 minutes, but where there's only one speaker, so 3 minutes. Call to the audience may not result in discussion with members of the CSCC. No legal action may take place during the call to the audience, and speakers may not be disruptive. Members of the CSCC may only respond to criticism and request that items be placed on a future agenda for discussion. Members of the audience may still participate in agendized items as per the bylaws of the CSCC. So, Kylie, go ahead.
Okay, I'm going to apologize. I am outside, so I hope that you can hear me okay, and I'll go
Yes.
fast. Okay. Good evening, members of the Complete Streets Coordinating Council. My name is Kylie Walczak. I live in Menlo Park and currently serve as the Neighborhood Association's president, though I make this statement tonight as a resident of Menlo Park, not on behalf of the association. some helpful context for the Prop 411 safety improvements funding request for Silverbell Road from St. Mary's to Congress. That's on your agenda tonight. As far as I could tell from doing a little bit of research, the last time Silverbell Road had any significant repaving work was 1996, the year I graduated high school. If past is prologue, my son, who is 8 and is just starting to become a confident bicycle rider, likely won't see this road revisited for repaving work until he is 36 years old. We hope that won't be the case. We keep describing this to our neighbors as a once in a generation opportunity to improve safety on Silverbell for all users, and we really aren't exaggerating. Paving and striping plans for Silverbell Road were drawn up in 2017, the year Tucson voters approved Proposition 101. However, since 2017, Tucson passed the Complete Streets policy, adopted the citywide transportation plan Move Tucson, approved the new Tucson Street Design Guide. Pima Association of Governments conducted a road safety assessment along Silverbell Road, and requests for safety improvements along Silverbell were included in two rounds of Ward 1's budget de la gente. Yet the 2017 Silverbell plans were not revisited, reexamined, or revised through the lens of any of those new policies, plans, guides, or assessments. And it was only once residents received a letter in January 2024 alerting us that work was beginning that we asked if we could see the striping plans for Silverbell. We learned it is not a requirement for DTM staff to present striping plans to the community for feedback or input. We ask DTM and the Complete Streets Coordinating Council to continue their vigilance when looking at opportunities for safety improvements, particularly when considering requests like this along a stretch of road that has not seen investment in almost 30 years and that has a long documented paper trail of requests for safety improvements, and particularly when it comes to projects with plans that predate the work we've all done to make safer streets in Tucson the default. We almost missed our chance, and it's only because so many people have had their eyes on Silverbell for so long that we are able to ask you to approve this safety funding today. We feel incredibly lucky that we were able to communicate in time with DTM staff and engineers, in particular project manager Sarah Spencer, before the work began in order to advocate for the inclusion of the safety improvements before you today. And I just want to say thanks to Sarah, Ryan Fagan, and Patrick Hartley for working with us to revise the plans for Silverbell Road. We think these improvements will lead to a safer experience for everyone, including the southbound driver who missed the turn at Anklam early this morning and crashed into a retaining wall. So thank you all. We hope you will approve these requests.
Thank you, Kylie. And that'll be, we'll be dealing with the Silverbell agenda item and two after the next topic. Any other audience members? Okay. All right, thank you. So,
Tanya, we'll just
go ahead.
Mention that I have distributed, I believe we received 7 or 8 letters of support for this project that have come in as written statements. Those have been distributed to the CSCC prior to the meeting. And then will be incorporated into the meeting minutes and captured in the meeting record.
Excellent. Okay. All right. So, we'll come back to this topic shortly. Let's proceed with our neighborhood mini grant review. Gabriela?
Thank you, Tanya. Good morning, members of good afternoon, evening, members of the Complete Streets Coordinating Council. I am excited to come back to you. I believe last time we gave an update was in September last year. I think you will enjoy this presentation. There's a lot. I'm going to kind of go through the first part quickly. There's a lot to get through. Can you see my screen?
Yes.
Awesome. Okay. So today we'll start with a program overview, recap, especially for like new members, how we got here, and then go into the Safe Streets mini grant program. And then our recommendation, and finish off with discussion and Q&A. So hoping to leave 10, 15 minutes for the end. So jot down your questions and we'll get into a pretty in-depth discussion. Okay, for the overview, this is funded by Proposition 411 and Tucson Delivers, which was passed by voters This is part of the system-wide safety improvements project category. So there's the repaving, which is a big chunk of the 411 funds, and then system-wide safety, which and then an even smaller piece of the system-wide safety, which 10% is allocated for neighborhood safety improvements. So we're calling that traffic calming. Who can apply for the mini grant program that is has been live since mid-October? It, neighborhood groups, associations, community-based organizations, informal groups of neighbors, and businesses that are located on a neighborhood or local street. We are prioritizing projects in areas with higher concentration of transportation and mobility vulnerable populations using our latest equity data from the City of Tucson Office of Equity, which is called the TEDS data. This is a visual of how we got here. We spent a greater part of last year developing the program. We had came to you a couple times as in various stages when we had draft materials, did some community engagement early on, and launched the program in mid-October. And we are over here in the pilot year design. So as soon as we get approval for the projects, we'll notify the applicants and start the design and construction, which we'll see how long that takes because this is the pilot year, but hopefully the design and construction will be done within a year. And this is what I came to you all with last time. So we had kind of come up with a breakdown of the funds, assuming we have $450,000 worth of collections per year. We thought that the mini grants would be about $275,000, and we had already had a $75,000 set aside from already approved traffic calming projects that we wanted to get going as low-hanging fruit while we waited for the mini grant program to kick off. So you all had approved a small number of those, and this is what we were kind of anticipating, and I wanted to like see what was left for consultant support services. Since then, we've had lots of staff discussions, and we believe that we won't need as much for the consultant support services, and so we can add more to the mini grants. So this is what you had approved before, the $75,000. And since then, there has been a development. So you had approved four projects. One of them was South Park, which is now being funded by the Ward 5 office through their reduced speed hump program. So that brings that total set aside for the approved neighborhood traffic calming projects to $58,500. And this is a quick visual to show you how we arrived to these four projects. They had to have petitions that they already went through the process through getting agency approvals. And they one of them was about to expire. They're good for 4 years. And if there was overlap with repaving work, that was a plus. And equity, of course. Okay, so here's the breakdown. I wanted to show you just for transparency of what the breakdown of the equity priority areas is of those initial NTMP projects. So we have about, let's see, what percent of the projects are in low opportunity areas? So 64% low opportunity, high equity. Here is a visual of what the locations of the three, and we have one in Flowing Wells. It's currently in construction. That's in conjunction with the repaving work. The Rose traffic circle is complete, and we're going to have three speed humps going in and Ward 2 on North Sarnoff Drive. Okay, CSCC approvals to date, March 2023. You all gave us the go-ahead to proceed with the program concept and equity framework to stand up the mini grant application process. In August, you had approved those projects that I just showed and that were previously approved from NTMP. In September, you all reviewed the criteria to score and evaluate the applications. And now here we are with the first batch of recommended projects. Really exciting. Activities to date, the program launched October 16th. We received around 50 applications from launch to March 1st, which was the first cutoff in terms of our review period. It is open. It's open on an, the applications are accepted on an ongoing basis. So that means that you can submit at any time during the year. It's just, and at this point, given our staff resources, we're able to review them once a year in the spring. That could change after this pilot year. We assemble the 5-member interdisciplinary review committee, and the review committee reviewed all those applications, the 50, independently and convened 3 times in the last 2 months to deliberate scores. Then we ranked applications and prepared this funding proposal for you all. Just a refresher, and for those that have not seen this before, this is what we use to score every single application. And it mirrors the Move Tucson priorities. So we have equity is we decided to weight that 35% based on your all's input and had great support from the director as well. The safety is heavily weighted at 30%, looking at crash frequency and severity as well as known problems specified in the application. Then we're looking at the built environment, what's the existing presence of sidewalk, traffic calming, planned road work, of community readiness. So are they on the wait list for speed humps? Have they already done a lot of legwork? If not, is there, what is like the knowledge and the history of prior efforts or just general leadership and community climate? So that was using a public health framework. And then the resiliency is an opportunity to encourage people to switch to different ways of getting around. We looked at walking and biking buffer of 0.25 miles in relation to the, where their traffic calming request is to like retail and other destinations. Okay, here's a map of all the 50 that we received prior to March 1st. You can see it's a nice, even, pretty even distribution across the whole city. So we were really excited to see this. This didn't happen by accident. There was a lot of work, targeted outreach, and I really give a lot of credit to the ward office staff who sent so many referrals to us. And because, you know, they're really like the front lines in terms of getting working with neighborhoods. So you can see a lot of them are in the dark purple is the higher equity priority areas. What we did with this is a, it was like 5-step process. When we received the applications, we looked for the eligibility. Is it on a local street? Do they have the champions? The review criteria I showed. And then we did 2 stages of review, looking first at qualitative data, sorry, the quantitative data. So just like, is it in an equity area or not? Are there crashes? Yes or no? And then the panel where they came in was here for the qualitative piece and reading the actual open-ended responses. Then we ranked them by scores and the estimated of scope of work based on what they said. So that's a really rough estimate. But if they say 2 traffic circles, we look at our menu of options sheet and estimate it at being like $30,000, for example, if they were each 15,000, for example. Okay. And then another thing that we did look at, is there at least one award in each, is there at least, yeah, at least one award in each ward. So I have 2 scenarios that I'll show you later that accounts for that detail. Then stage 5 is the pre-approval of the award project location. So that's where we are tonight. And we're hoping to, at the end of this meeting, have a some good direction from you all on how you want us to proceed. Here is a recommendation to award in terms of the top 7. So this is the most fiscally conservative scenario and looking at what were the top 7 ranked applications. And you can see here that total is 331,000. The funding, or sorry, the equity metric. As a reminder, we wanted to make sure that at least 60% of the funds went to neighborhoods in high equity priority areas. And that is 100% of these, so that's pretty good. Okay, now here we have a different scenario. This is a top 7, including 3 alternates. So you, we have the top 7 there and the 3 alternates in orange. You'll see in a map in a little bit that the orange ones have a account for it at least that scenario of at least one in each ward. So for this one, we have 91% of the projects on this top 10 list are in high equity priority areas. So that way exceeds the 60% goal we had. Okay, and then I'm going to run through these really quick, but Patrick gave some good feedback. He's like, it's going to be hard for them to approve these without understanding what's going on. So here's a quick snapshot. And the Dodge, this we're starting from top ranked to lowest in the top 10. Dodge Flowers, and these bullet points were taken directly from the application. So it's their quotes. Concerns about high traffic volume, speeding, and a history of accidents, and here's or crashes, and here's where they're what they're proposing and where. See a combination of chicanes and traffic circles. Limberlost, heavy traffic and speeding, concerns on North 4th Avenue. Pedestrians and users of the Limberlost Family Park are identified as those who will benefit from the traffic calming. They also requested traffic calming, I believe it was speed tables on Limberlost Road, which we initially thought were not possible and didn't think it was a local street, but then I learned today that it might be possible. So that the scope of work could change. This is just one possibility. Elvira, and this is, we received, I believe, 5 applications for this one. And people that didn't know that the other one was applying. It's a very big neighborhood as well. And that there's are really serious concerns on Pinta Avenue. We also had already, the neighborhood had already collected petitions for this one, and a few of the, most of the speed humps were approved. This one there's a lot of concern for children's safety, as mentioned, that there's a school nearby as well. And people are using this almost as a frontage road. Rose Neighborhood, there's cut through traffic at high speeds, a history of accidents is mentioned. When we talked to the resident, when I talked to the residents at an event, they said that the traffic circle that we installed with Tucson Clean and Beautiful has been making a difference, but they're noticing it could even be improved by bookending that street with some speed humps. Sunnyside, a few speed humps and traffic circle. This is near Liberty Elementary. So they reported that there were accidents due to speeding, street racing, which we've heard many times on Missiondale. And again, concern for children's safety. Duffy, a speed hump or table would help reduce the speeding drivers coming from North Craycroft while allowing the flow of traffic to continue. Traffic circle at Woodland and 4th Street would be even better. Barrio Santa Cruz is the last one. This map was made by the applicant. They are looking, this corner here is really problematic, and they reported it's kind of like a blind spot and people are traveling at high speeds, and there's a park. So there's a lot of, I mean, it's a huge anchor for the community. And Barrio Santa Cruz, like many others, are located near the highway and have been divided from the construction of the highway. So there's, I was pleased to see a lot of energy around those neighborhoods as well. It gives us an opportunity to really invest there. And impact to the 10-year program here is that the first scenario I showed you, which I believe was 6-7 projects, 331,000. If we did the scenario B that has one at least one in every ward, it's 459,000. And that does exceed what we thought we would, our collection anticipated collections back in August, but it turns out that our collections are doing a bit better. So we could afford to do this scenario B. It would just mean that we might have to take a little bit from the following fiscal year. And the design construction contingency, they have like at least 10% here. And that's, we're anticipating that we won't need to use consultants unless it's something that goes beyond our standard details. So for example, a traffic triangle, that's not something that we typically do. It's not a standard dimensions. Okay, this just shows the scenarios again one more time for rank only. These are the projects there for 331,000, and this one shows the previously approved NTMP projects. This is scenario B, so rank plus ward consideration of at least one in every ward. And you can see here the one in ward four is located in, it's not the highest equity, but within ward four, it is a pretty high, it's definitely on the higher end. And we can go back to these maps during the discussion. So this total would be 459,000. All right, so now we're at the discussion. Really welcome questions to begin with. And then just, we hope to have your feedback and potentially authorize funding for all those projects, either scenario A or B. And our next step after that will be to notify all the applicants in April regarding their award status.
Excellent. Thank you. Are there questions or comments? You can raise your hand. Charlie, then Ruth.
Hi. I want to make sure that I understood this correctly. You stated that the applications are still allowed on a rolling basis, but did you say that because of limitations of staff, they won't be reviewed again for another year?
At this time, yes, but it could be twice a year, just like at this very moment, that's what we can do.
Okay. So what happens with the, so we're talking about either 7 or 10 out of the 50 applications.
Mm-hmm.
Is it wiped out, a clean slate, start over again, or do those stick around?
Great question. They stick around. What we have in mind right now and really open to your feedback to at a later meeting is, let's say, like, those scores stay. So basically everybody else is on the wait list. So when it comes, when we arrive to this time next year, let's say the, you know, 12th ranked person is, ends up being number one, and we don't get many applications that score above that one, then they're awarded. So it's all based on that score. And we're thinking that the applications will be good for around 3 years. So we don't want people to be reapplying every year. Their score stays. And then after so many years, that's still to be determined exactly how many they can apply again. But a lot of times these conditions are not going to change drastically from 1 year to another.
Gabrielle, will you be, when you notify people who submitted grants, will it only be notifying those who were awarded the mini grant or notifying everyone? And will they, is there a way for a neighborhood to know their score, for instance? Like,
yes,
whether it's even possible that they would be reviewed in the next year?
Yes, absolutely. We can certainly include their score and a little bit of the scores across the board if you think that's helpful. We have that information. And yes, everybody would be notified in April. So it's the yes, I believe there'll be like three different categories of congratulations, you were awarded. Congratulations, you scored very high, but we had 50 applicants, more than 50 applications. You're currently on the wait list for X amount of years. Please, you will be notified around this time next year if you move up to the year two awards. And then the ones, the third category would be those that were ineligible. So there were a handful, I want to say like five or so, that were just like not even anything to do with this program. For example, like there was one on a major street and I can't remember which one, but it wasn't even about traffic calming. It was about a road widening project. So.
Okay, Zach, then Arielle.
Hi, thank you. I just have a like kind of a question in general about the speed humps that are being proposed. I'm assuming these are neighborhood neighborhood streets that also may not have sidewalk. I haven't walked down all of them, obviously, but I'm assuming pedestrians use the street. Will the speed humps go across the whole side of each street down to the curb? Because I could see that being challenging for some wheelchair users and or scooter or other mobility device users to try to navigate up and down the speed hump if its height is like, I don't know what the height would be of those speed humps, but I don't know if that was a consideration or a thought, so.
We will certainly, that's a great question. We'll certainly take that into consideration when we get to the design. So let's say your neighborhood was awarded and the next step will be they still need to get approval. So the agency approvals through the NTMP process, they're going to have to collect the petitions. It'll be reviewed by all of the departments and the agency approval. So police, fire, many others as well. And that's when we get into the technical pieces like you're talking about. And so we'll
Thank you very
definitely make
much.
sure that they're accessible. And
Thanks.
Great. Ariel?
Thank you so much for all of this. My question was related to the scenario B with the rank and the ward consideration. Which was the project that would potentially be added for Ward 2 in the scenario? I'm the Ward 2 rep, that's why.
Okay, great. Yeah, those it's on Sarnoff Road and it's three speed humps.
Okay, so that's the one
Because
that was the previously un already approved previously un but unfunded project.
exactly, yeah.
Okay,
And
all right. Thank you.
Other questions or comments?
Just to clarify, it was so that it would be the Ward 4 traffic calming that would be added in scenario B.
That's right. The ward, yeah, thanks, Patrick. The Ward 2 one will be there regardless because it was already approved by the CSCC in August.
So just a point of clarification, if that's okay. So none of the newly approved or recommended projects were in Ward 2. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay, thanks.
Yeah, so that one, that Patrick is correct. That one will not change between scenario A or B. You can see that the one in Ward 2 is still there. So it's already approved. The ones that change in terms of like ward representation is this Ward 4 one.
Okay, so do you want to queue up what the decision is for tonight? Is it approving all of the proposed pilot year projects so that the and that's what you're putting on the table, and that's what we want
Yes.
discussion around and approval.
Yep. And then we're looking for the CSCC's guidance on which scenario they would prefer, A or B.
Okay, oh, sorry, Miranda, go ahead.
Thanks. And thanks for being here and giving this presentation. I really appreciate like seeing the whole process broken down, and I'm excited to see how things unfold. I'm curious to like talk through a little bit more what the difference, like what the pros and cons would be of funding 10 versus 7. Because part of where my mind is going is that I'm always hearing about how construction costs are increasing. So I don't know if there's some kind of incentive to maybe try, like, if these are projects that are going to get funded sooner or later, like, I think that we're presented with this scenario a lot where everything is deserving of funding, but there's not enough to do everything. But, you know, I'm just curious if there's like more that we can sort of dig into about, like, is it worth being more conservative right now or just going for it because these are all deserving?
That's a really good question. Patrick, I'm wondering what your thoughts are on that.
Yeah, it's a great point with the cost escalating, and we have seen it outpacing revenue. So things are only getting more expensive, and the revenue isn't really keeping up. One thing to kind of keep in mind is that 450 is based on the 2022 valuation of that. So the funding is coming in a little bit faster than kind of that 450 base year. So we will be getting more revenue in the back years. but it'll be kind of the purchasing power equivalent of that same $450,000, if that makes sense, as a function of inflation. So I think there could be some wisdom in that, but there's a lot of uncertainty. Costs have been extremely variable. If cost constraint was there and we were limited in terms of the revenue growth, I would say absolutely that makes financial sense, but I think it's a bit more complicated to predict what's going to happen with those construction costs versus the revenue picture. That doesn't clarify anything for you in your question, but it's a great question. From our perspective, what it really does is we're just moving a little bit more money, front loading a little bit more. It's going to be a little bit more of a delivery slate for us. So it might be a little bit slower going for us to get the entire package of projects out the door from a staffing perspective. But it'll also give us better distribution around the city and move some very deserving projects. We're just going to be reducing some revenue in the out years.
Marshall.
Sorry, I just want to add one more thing. Thank you, Patrick. One other consideration or pro that I thought of, Miranda, is this Barrio Nopal, for example, ranked number 9, is currently being repaved. So we could follow it up with traffic calming right after the repavement in that case. Barrio Hollywood is not, and I believe the Carson Corner one is not either. It's one other factor.
Marshall, then Ruth.
Yeah, I was just going to ask, kind of going off the back of the cost, and I think she just kind of answered it. Could you tie any of these projects to existing work or planned work within the next year to limit the cost growth there?
Yes, a lot of them. And I just met with Jim DeGroote today to get his latest updates on the construction schedule. So if I remember correctly, Limberlost, Elvira, and Barrio Nopal are for sure all being done, if not now, within the next year. So the construction bids are going out. So with Barrio Nopal, it's because it's already in construction, we're not sure that we'll be able to tie it together as part of a project while they're still out there doing work, because the neighborhood still has to go out and collect the petition. So we'll figure that out in the next week or two.
And so I think that leads credence to rank, you know, going with option B, especially if we can limit some costs in some of those estimates.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you.
Ruth.
Could you, Gabrielle, could you go to the scenario B slide?
Sure.
Because I have a question on the funding timing. This is the first allocation of this for this program. So we've been collecting money since what, 2022?
Mm-hmm.
So if the projection was 450 per year, we should have 2023 money and some 2022 money to allocate. Yes. So right. 562 is low compared to what should be in the bank.
Right. Yeah, good point, Ruth. And then I did ask for the latest collections. This was as of Friday, and the FY23 collections were $407,942, and then collections to date are $730,948.
So we're not spending money we don't have. We're spending
exactly. We have the cash, but because the scenario two dips into FY. This current fiscal year, it just means that the next one would have a little less. That makes sense. But not a lot less.
I don't see why it would have any less.
So we have the money in the bank. Cash flow is not an issue. It's just that we were trying to parcel it out one year. There's typically a year delay by the time you start collecting to when you're starting to get projects out. So we would be delivering 18 months of revenue worth of projects, even though we kind of advertised it for a single year. So one of the back years might only be then a half year of projects, if that makes sense.
Okay.
We're trying to keep it as year to year, as opposed to a cash flow issue. It's better for us to be carrying a little bit of money too, so we know that we could deliver these. We've got a little bit of a buffer. We've got the money in the bank.
Yeah, because that $58,000 is old money, isn't it?
Yes, that was from FY23.
So that puts it more at 500,000 than 562.
Right.
Okay. I think this, yeah, I don't see where we would have a problem with scenario B and go for the 10, in my opinion.
Great. Thank you, Ruth.
Charlie, then Craig.
Just a follow-up question to my earlier one about, you know, how the applications will stick around and, you know, how new projects get funded. So let's say that we do award funding to the 7 that fit the top right now and don't fund these other possible 3. Then they stay in the pool. Will they automatically be the top 3 the next round, or will any new projects that get proposed that might have a higher equity need potentially move in front of them?
Good question. So it's all based on the total score, which is not just equity, but everything that else that I mentioned with the safety. So let's say, I believe Elvira was like 80 points, something around there. I think the highest score was 83. I'd have to, next time we'll do like more stats, but 80, let's say 80 is the top in the pool next year, then it's ranked number 1. But if we get new applications that are 90, which then they're number 1. So it's like your score stays the same. That was what we thought is like the most fair way to do it. But great question.
Craig.
Yeah, so I'm kind of thinking of two scenarios, one good, one bad, that have similar outcomes. So, and sort of to follow up on both Marshall and Miranda's point. So if we have a project that gets really, really expensive and, you know, because costs are going up, or on the other hand, we have a project that sort of gets tied into something else and maybe, you know, the work that's being done, you know, in another area gives the improvements that we're kind of looking for. In either one of those scenarios, could we take money, or would we have to take money, you know, from one project and give it to another? And how would we decide that? Or would we just kind of like play that by ear when it comes up? Or I'm just kind of like looking forward to potential things that could happen, you know, based on how we vote tonight. If we vote for 7 or 10, you know, can we move money around if something comes up in the future, unforeseen things come up in the future?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I also will mention that each award is capped at 75,000. So if when we get into the design and we find out this Dodge Flower is actually more of a $100,000 project, then it's a conversation with the neighborhood about priorities. So it's like, these are the, what would you rather have? 1 traffic circle and 2 chicanes, or, you know, it's like that sort of exercise. They're looking to award projects at, the maximum 75,000, the minimum is 25,000, but we can definitely, like you're saying, if there's cost savings in one, it just adds it more to the pool, but we don't want to exceed the 75,000. But yes, the scope of work for these projects could change. This is just a snapshot of what it is based on what they asked for in the application. So next step for the ones that are awarded is the feasibility, like what's possible. Yeah, great question.
Ariel?
I was wondering if there are opportunities to get some kind of high-level feedback, like on, or advice on improving applications for the next round. It seems like just because the applications for the new applications in Ward 2 weren't approved, is there something that people need to do better for next time around? It'd be interesting to know what that is. If there's tips or advice or a checklist they should follow, that would be super helpful.
Yeah, that's a great recommendation. We'll build that into the process. It's a little tricky with some of like the equity. Look at its weight, 35%, you can't change that, right, in your neighborhood. That's simply demographic data. But the 30, like safety is 30%. So if it's perhaps they need to highlight the issues better. However, I will say that all 50 of those did very specifically say like what the issues were. So we didn't see any like incomplete answers that would really change the score if they were to be submit. And some of it is just data that they can't control either, right? It's like looking at the crash data, looking at the existing sidewalk presence too. So there's maybe the community readiness. That's something that we could definitely provide feedback on, getting more neighbors on board. That's a really good suggestion. Thank you.
Okay, so we need to try to come to wrap up this topic. Do you want to decide on the scenario first and then the approval of the authorization of the funds? And do you have a preference for which scenario is on the table that we can then put to a consensus and check in if that's, which of the two do you think is the one that should be addressed first?
For this pilot year, I do believe that the scenario B, which is the top seven, including the three alternates, would be the way to go. Give folks just, I mean, we had so much interest. So as long as we have the staff capacity to deliver these, we would really like to be able to award more.
So is there anyone on the commission that would not support going with B? Okay, so that looks like everybody would support B. B is good, says Craig. Mm-hmm. So let's do, that would mean that we're providing consensus support for B, and then we can record it as a vote as well. And so if our co-chairs could just, and I'm assuming, Patrick, we need to do two different decisions here. Or not?
No, I think we could just be an authorization of funding for the 10 projects on the screen.
Okay, so B's it is, and then the second part of this is authorization of the funding for these 10 projects. Is there anyone who is not supportive of that? Okay, so that means there's consensus support for the 10 projects in scenario B, and Miranda, can you do a motion to approve that? And then Sophia, second.
I move to approve all 10 projects in scenario B for funding.
I second that motion.
Excellent. All right. Thank you so much, Gabriela.
Thank you all very much. I appreciate it.
Okay. So the next topic is 411 funding request, Silverbell Road between Congress and St. Mary's. We have 30 minutes for this. We're actually exactly on time. The purpose of this is to review and approve 411 projects. So Ryan is going to introduce this, and then by the end, we're trying to come have a decision on this approval. So Ryan.
Ah, thank you. Let me just share my screen real fast here. All right. Thank you all. My name is Ryan Fagan. I'm a project manager with the Department of Transportation and Mobility. And I'll just dive right into it. So I'm here to discuss some proposed improvements to Silverbell Road. And just general overview, this is probably familiar, but basically I'll be going over the details of what we're proposing and why we're requesting funding for it at this time, how it relates to CSCC priorities, and what the impact of the five-year plan is. So as you would expect, the main goal is to improve safety for all users. And the way that we would like to do that is by improving walkability and accessibility along Silverbell and across Silverbell, by calming traffic, by providing a low stress bike facility on Silverbell, and by leveraging repaving work to make these strategic improvements that we're proposing. So the location is on Silver Bell Road from St. Mary's to Congress Street. And the reason for that is that there is a Proposition 101 repaving project that's happening there. And with that repaving, there are already some improvements happening with the restriping that will go along with the repaving. That'll include narrower vehicle lanes and buffered bike lanes based on the guidelines in our street design guide. In addition, there will be a stretch of parallel parking added in front of St. Mary's Hospital. And Anklam Road will be narrowed at the intersection with Silver Bell to remove the right turn slip lane and shorten the crossing distance there. So in addition to those improvements, we've identified some additional improvements that could be implemented with the repaving and restriping work that's already going to be happening. So the first one of those would be protected bike lanes. This would be about 3,500 feet of protected bike lanes, covering the majority of the area that's being resurfaced. These would use separators that would be located in the buffers that are already going to be going in with the repaving and restriping work. It did not look like concrete curb is going to be feasible due to the need for significant drainage improvements that would occur there. There's a lot of drainage coming off of Tumamoc Hill, and there's a significant wash that crosses near Anklam. So we are a little bit limited in terms of the devices that we have, but we are actually looking at potentially using our first kind of large-scale deployment of what are called K71 posts for this purpose. You can see an illustration of these right here. They are flexible plastic, but they are they're wider and a bit shorter than our standard flex posts. We are hoping that we'll find that they are more durable, and certainly they have a more sort of substantial visual presence. So the hope is that they would also be a bit less likely to be run into. The city has actually used those in a couple locations already. One of them is at the intersection of 7th Street and 5th Avenue. And there's also there's some other locations sort of in the region as well where they've been used on a smaller scale. We would also be proposing an RFB push button pedestrian crossing that would be similar to the one that you see pictured here that's located on Congress near Linda Avenue, I believe, and near Bonita. And that would be proposed to be located by the bus stops in front of St. Mary's Hospital. And it would include a pedestrian refuge island. So with that refuge island, you'd shorten the effective crossing distance significantly. You'd only need to cross one side of the street at a time. We're also proposing to close the sidewalk gap on the east side of Silver Bell between Franklin and Congress. That's about 1,100 feet of sidewalk on the south end of the stretch of road here. We're also looking at adding some pedestrian refuge islands. The primary goal of that would be to improve connections across Silver Bell to access the existing and the new sidewalk on the east side of the street. The exact locations are as yet to be determined. There's a number of factors that we need to do a little more looking into. One of them is that putting in an island like that can trigger other improvements that may be outside the scope of what we can accomplish right here, but and there's some other issues relating to drainage that we'll just need to work through potentially. So we don't have any specific locations right now, but it is an improvement that we're hoping to pair with the new sidewalk and other improvements. So getting to where this came from, why we're proposing to do this now. So first off, this is a Tier 1 Move Tucson project. Some of the improvements that were identified in Move Tucson for the stretch of Silver Bell were to fill sidewalk gaps, enhance the bike lanes, and repave the roadway. Ward 1 initiated a road safety assessment last year that was done on Silver Bell. That was completed a little under a year ago and had a number of short, medium, and long-term recommendations. So we are able to implement some of those. There's also been some input from a meeting with the Menlo Park Neighborhood Association that was held earlier this year. And so coming out of those, there's interest and recommendations in an enhanced pedestrian crossing in front of the hospital, filling in those sidewalk gaps, and narrowing vehicle lanes and improving bike lanes. Additionally, the street design guide and guidance from the Federal Highway Administration support protected bike lanes, the addition of pedestrian refuge islands where we can implement them, and our RFB push button crossing. And then obviously we have this opportunity because there's already construction work that's going to be happening on Silver Belt. It actually already has started with some waterline work that's happening that's funded by Prop 101. So rough estimated cost of these improvements is $590,000. So the majority of that would be coming from the sidewalk and pedestrian accessibility category, and about $100,000 each coming from bike network enhancements and system-wide safety improvements. So why are we looking to do this now? So there are potential cost savings by combining this with the Prop 101 repaving project. We have the opportunity to integrate the design with the restriping, making sure that we can integrate the improvements that we're proposing with that striping plan and vice versa while that road is being repaved. And there are some significant walkability and bikeability improvements that we can make here at a relatively low cost. And just in terms of equity, this project it straddles the line between two areas. One that's ranked highest by the Move Tucson equity analysis methodology, and one that's the 60-80th percentile group there. And then in terms of connectivity, this is just kind of showing some nearby existing and proposed attractors and projects and corridors. So, you know, I think the biggest benefits would be really that we'd be providing continuous sidewalk, at least along one side of Silver Bell, all the way from St. Mary's to Congress. We'd be improving bike access along Silver Bell. There's a number of destinations and nearby bicycle facilities that this would improve access to. It would also improve walking access to some SunTran bus stops along Route 21. So the safety record along Silver Bell, it's not bad. The PAG Safety Explorer indicates that the performance there is fair. There were a total of 15 reported crashes in the project area between 2018 and 2022. Note that this does exclude the major intersections, which you know, are not being touched by this project, so not exactly relevant. But in terms of the actual stretch of Silver Bell we're looking at here, no severe crashes, no bicycle or pedestrian crashes, at least were reported within the project boundaries during those years. And as far as the impact of the draft five-year plan goes, it would have a fairly minor impact. The project cost is estimated at about $590,000. That's about 8% of the annual 411 sidewalk budget, about 3% of the annual 411 bike network budget, and about 2.5% of the annual system-wide improvements budget. But the impact on the five-year plan is uncertain, as the overall cost of the Vector program is being revisited and new revenue projections will become available. So just to provide a little more context here, the Move Tucson project, ideally we would be including sidewalks on both sides of the street. There's also lighting and landscaping that are specified in that project description. Right now, we're not recommending those improvements at this time due to schedule and cost. There's some significant issues on the west side of the street, as you can see in this picture here, but you know, there's a lot of grade issues here. It essentially turns into a far, far larger project if we're going to be looking at making improvements on the west side and making those kind of higher dollar improvements. So that's all I got for my presentation. I'd love to take some questions if you have any.
Sophia.
Yes, I have a few questions, three things. So the first is a shorter question. Ward 1 had requested the road safety assessment, and I was curious who can request the RSAs. Is that something that the CSCC can do?
That's a great question. Patrick, can I throw this to you?
I think absolutely. So what you could do is if you wanted to make a request as a committee, a formal action, that could come to me and we could share that with our traffic engineering department who really kind of lays out the opportunities for those. So the request would be there, it would be on their radar, and it would be one they would advance. It often base is based on what we have for kind of budget and capacity to be able to do them. There's only a finite number we can do each year. But oftentimes they are coming from the ward offices, but I would think it would be strongly entertained if it came from the CSCC.
But then probably not like community groups or anyone like that.
That's a good question. That one I would have to follow up with our traffic engineering division on to see if there's any formal policies on that.
Thank you. And then the second thing was just, I feel like I saw this a lot in the comments, and this is something that I personally experienced too with accessing Tumamuck, is really pushing for a hot crossing around Tumamuck. And I know probably has to be negotiated with also connecting the hospital to the Safeway Plaza, but just wanted to voice that. And then the third thing is that Ward 1 residents have been complaining to the office about the bus coming through the neighborhood. They say that the bus is rattling their houses, and the neighborhood road isn't necessarily designed for something as heavy as a bus. So I think it's just opening up the conversation about, how can we make that work for keeping the Route 2021 and looking to put it on Silverbell. And yeah, I guess just understanding those constraints better, and also what are the alternatives or opportunities.
Yeah, thanks for that. So, as far as a hawk at Anklam or anywhere along Silverbell, that unfortunately that would be outside the scope of what we can do now. An RRFB would, it's a different kind of a crossing improvement than a hawk. I don't want to say lesser or better. But it is one that just for the context is an appropriate improvement. Doesn't preclude us putting a hawk in the future. But just wanted to mention that.
Yeah, and I just have to jump in with the RFFB. Like on the south side, there's so many people who are already running through hawk lights. And so to me, an RFFB is really ineffective. I'd rather just save the money to put that towards a hawk crossing. And that's my experience. I don't know if other members on the CSCC have used and enjoy the RFFBs, but that's my hot take.
Thank you.
Thanks, Sophia. Go ahead, Ryan.
Yeah, I just wanted to sorry, I wanted to address the Route 21 comments as well. So I think there's a number of improvements that would need to take place along Silverbell. I actually did discuss that with some staff earlier this week. And the issues that I mentioned earlier with the grading on the west side of Silverbell, with essentially it being the side of a hill there, we would need to be putting in bus pads and sidewalks on the west side, and that unfortunately is just not in the scope of what we can accomplish now. Again, none of this work precludes that those improvements or a relocation of Route 21 in the future. So just wanted to get that out of the way.
Other comments or questions?
I can go.
Go ahead. Marshall and then Riley. Not quite sure who was first.
I was just going to ask, with those protected bike lanes, I know there's a road just off of downtown, I can't remember the name of it, that uses the zebra stripes, those kind of like raised. Is there any reason we wouldn't use those here? By these K70 ones would be better.
Yeah, so I don't have the full story of exactly what's happening there. That would be Main Avenue where we've been trialing those Zeekla zebras. I know we've had some maintenance issues there. They are not as resilient as some other options. They tend to break apart, whereas flex posts or concrete would tend to be more resilient and withstand impacts. So we're hoping the K71s, which we haven't trialed on a larger scale in Tucson yet, we're hoping that those will be more resilient than the Zebras. The other issue with Zebras is just that they tend to work best with lower speed streets, and I believe that Maine and Silverbill are both signed at 30 miles per hour. In both cases, Main Avenue was road dieted, was narrowed down. Silverbell, we're looking to actually much more significantly narrow the lane widths and hopefully get those speeds down. The K71s we're hoping will be of sort of a longer lasting treatment than Zebras have been so far.
All right. Thank you.
Riley.
I just say that I'm strongly in favor of this proposal. It's an area that I frequent a lot, and it's a big area of concern. I've raised it with the ward. I did a Budget de la Gente proposal for the Inclam Silverbell intersection. I also ride this with my kids. I go to the Safeway there. We go to Tumamoc. We have friends in Menlo Park. I sometimes catch or get off the bus there. I drive there. I've sat in the turn lane on a bike with my kids, really worried. It's like one big obstacle to getting through that area safely. And I see people like in those little scooter wheelchairs, trying to get to the grocery store or crossing that street. And imagine a hospital, all the types of people that come and go. Where that RRFB is the bus stops, and people are getting off on one side to go to the hospital, the other side to go to the Safeway. There's nowhere to cross really from St. Mary's all the way pretty much to Congress. There's really not a safe crossing on there, especially during a rush hour time. So it's kind of a weird for all the pedestrians and cyclists and such. There's not really anywhere to cross, and that Inclam Silverbell is super sketchy because it's a curve and people like to drive fast and they cut the turn lane as they're coming south. I've sat on a bike and had cars cut that turn lane right next to me. So a long time ago, I probably reached out to Ryan Fagan a long time ago about it, and it was like, oh yeah, they're just paving it and they're just painting it and that's it. And it was really disappointing. So when I saw this come through, was it yesterday or Monday? I was like, oh my gosh, this is so great to see that there's a proposal to do some substantial safety work on this corridor. It was pretty frustrating and disappointing to see that there wasn't more going in the first place, and we just kind of resign ourselves to. And that is a question that comes up for me, is like, why wasn't this in there in the first place? But we don't need to get into that too much. I hope everybody read the letters that people wrote in there. I think this is a really great proposal, and it's a no-brainer for me. I'm open to hear what other people think, especially if there's any concerns or opposition to it. I think as a Tucson Transit representative here, obviously the bus stops in those sections right there, it's like a lot of parts of Tucson. You get off the bus and you can't cross the street safely. So I think it's going to be great for transit users as well. And then Sophia's question about the bus going on Silverbell, I think that was proposed in the current or in the recent, I know it was proposed in the revisions and the new route proposals, but there was a lot of local opposition to that change as well. And I think Chicanos Por La Causa was one of the big ones because people catch that bus and they can't cross and catch it on the other side, I think, something like that. Just so you know, I think there was some stuff related to that with changing the bus route there. Anyway, that's what I have to say for now. Anyway, thank you.
Thanks, Riley. That's helpful. We have Sophia, Zach, then Miranda.
So something else that I'm thinking of is with the scope of the project, you know, it sounds like, okay, Silver Lake is not considered, or Silver Bell is not considered safe enough for transit. And so that's something that has popped up before, like in the 5th and 6th Street Road Diet, a traffic study was done, safety was cited, but it's not really weighing pedestrian safety as much. And then something too that I think about is how there used to be a bunch of vendors at the base of a mountain because it was, you know, a liability issue, so they shut that down. But it used to be a thriving place where people would drive slowly by because there was a lot of use and people out. And so with Silver Bell, citing the mountain is kind of adding this big challenge to how we design the road. I feel like it would be good for the CSCC to kind of dig into that and look at how safety is being defined, because there are so many people who are walking, like Riley said, walking, biking, rolling around that area. And it really should, like, we really should be designing something that matches that pedestrian use, that high volume of pedestrian use.
Zach. Yeah, go
Sorry.
ahead.
Yeah, if I can just
Okay.
very briefly
Yeah.
speak to that. You know, I agree. I think I'm, you know, a larger, more comprehensive improvement to Silver Bell would be awesome. You know, right now we're looking at spending in the vicinity of about $500,000 to make some improvements. We'd be looking at probably at least an order of magnitude more if we really wanted to dig in to kind of make these more comprehensive improvements. So yeah, just, you know, we're doing our best to kind of propose the improvements that are kind of possible at this time. Again, not precluding anything that could happen in the future.
Zach.
Yeah, I just have a quick question on, like, if with the road narrowing and improvements in the bike lane on Silver Bell, sorry, I can't speak. Is there going to be a change in speed limit, or would traffic be expected to slow vehicle traffic, that is, be expected to slow naturally? You know, I mean, individual cars will do what they do. Drivers suck, but you know, I'm just curious. So.
Yeah, thanks for that. We can certainly see about evaluating the speed limit on Silver Bell. That would probably be something that would be it would be a parallel effort, not necessarily part of these improvements here. You know, already it's 30 miles an hour, which is relatively low. Not to say that we don't have streets that are signed lower than that. That's something that I'll bring up with our traffic engineering team, though. But yeah, the proposed improvements from the lane narrowing, you know, right now we have lanes that are in the vicinity of 15 feet wide. We're planning to narrow them to 10 feet. And additionally, you know, hopefully adding in some median refuge islands and you know, these posts to kind of visually, you know, narrow things further. So, you know, the expectation is that all these things combined would lower traffic speeds on Silver Bell.
Thank you. And I'm all about filling in sidewalk gaps, especially around healthcare facilities.
Yeah, we'll just add to the safety benefits are pretty well established. Now, there's a big comprehensive study that came out. I want to say, Ryan, was it Johns Hopkins that did it, looking at lane widths across the country and demonstrating that the narrower lanes do provide a safety benefit, particularly when you're getting down to that 10-foot range. And then these even flex posts or these bike separators have been studied and actually have been established about a 30 to 50% reduction in bike crashes as well. So the first study that just came out on the topic, I believe last year, and have proven pretty conclusively that these have a pretty impressive safety benefit over just a straight bike lane.
Miranda.
I just want to say I feel very supportive of this project, but I also echo Sophia's comments and interest in wanting to further explore like opportunities for more comprehensive safety improvements that, like, yes, will be more expensive, but it's such a high impact area. And then also just wanted to say it was really helpful to the comments that we received about this project from the public were really helpful and really detailed and compelling. And I also appreciated hearing from Riley. And I, you know, I mean, it's just an area that a lot of Tucsonans go to. And there's so many opportunities to make that place better. Definitely yes. And there can be more probably done.
Thanks.
Okay. We should now start sensing the members. And if you're going to be, it sounds like there's a lot of enthusiasm for this project and more. Does anyone have any concerns that you want to express, or are you not going to be able to give it at least a 1, 2, or 3 level of support? Okay. And Patrick, is there any need to get levels, or can we just do regular consensus?
Sounds like if there's no opposition being expressed,
let's go forward.
Let's go for it.
So it sounds like you are approving the, let's get the verbiage right. The decision would be to approve the 411 project, Silver Bell Road between Congress and St. Mary's. And that there's full support for that by consensus. So Miranda and Sophia, would you like to move to approve this as stated, or you can restate?
I move to approve the funding request of the Prop 411 project on Silver Bell between St. Mary's and Congress as presented.
I second the motion.
Excellent. Okay, congratulations on that decision, another decision tonight. And thank you, Ryan, for coming. And for all of you for your thoughtful thinking about this. Okay, the next one, which is shorter, is Jonathan about West Valencia Road.
Great, thanks. Hi, everybody. Can I share my screen, or do you do that for me?
You can do it. You should have access to do that.
Here we go. Which screen? Boy.
Are you looking for share screen?
No, I got share screen. I'm just looking for the which of my windows is, it's not showing my slideshow. Huh.
You could try for desktop and then just open your slideshow and see if that works.
Yeah, sorry about this. Let me close a couple of things down and limit the possibilities. So while I'm trying to do this, the county's Valencia Road job, as I think was indicated, is we got a raise grant for this project, $20 million, and we're in the early design stage. So it's a little bit early, frankly, to be going out for public input. We haven't started that formal process in the county, but I wanted to take the opportunity to get before you guys before it got too late, because things always have a way of running out of time, and I didn't want to do that with this project, so I'm almost there. Hang on a sec. All right, let's see if this works now. There we go. Share. And then let's see. I assume you can see my screen. I'm going to try to get it. God, I can't. Always something, isn't it? Here we go. Slideshow. All right. I think we're. Can you see it?
Yes.
Okay. I can't, so that doesn't make things easy.
There's a blue screen. Click to the next slide. You're on slide one.
All right, thanks. All right, yeah. So here we go. Is that working or is it too big, actually? Is it
looks really, really good.
All right. So here's the Valencia Road location. And just to give you an idea, it's the circled part of West Valencia Road on the west side of Tucson between Camino de la Terra and Mission Road. And I don't have very many slides, so this is going to be pretty short. I want to mostly have you guys talk and ask questions. This shows the project limits. Again, the western boundary is Camino de la Terra. The eastern boundary is Mission Road. There's three signalized intersections, some unsignalized intersections, and that's the project in a little more detail. This is a couple screenshots of just what it looks like out there for those of you who don't get out there very much. This is the intersection of Cardinal. It's basically four lanes divided in each direction with a paved shoulder for bikes and sidewalks on just a portion of this road. So one of the things that when we applied for the RAISE grant, we proposed to kind of address complete streets issues. So the intent of the project is to not only provide an additional lane of traffic capacity, so making it four lanes to six lanes, three in each direction, but to beef up and provide facilities for bikes and peds. And so we're in the early stages of design. We don't have something, you know, formally to show you, but I want to walk you through a couple ideas that we're bouncing around here. So this image shows a couple of different things. On the upper left, you'll see three lanes of traffic and a buffered or protected bike lane, a little buffer and a sidewalk area. That's kind of typical for what we would normally see for much of this design. I want to point out in the upper right, this design of a buffered bike lane. It's a lot like what Ryan just showed you for Silverbell Road, except instead of using the K51s, is it they're called, pylons, we're actually proposing to put in a concrete curb along that buffer area, maybe 6 inches high. We're not quite sure. In the bottom right, you can see a cross-section picture of, you know, a bus stop. And in those locations, our proposal would be to pull the bicycle route from the street up onto the curb and behind the bus route so that the bus can actually pull up close to the curb for loading. And then the bottom right just shows a portion of the corridor is alongside the Tohono O'odham lands that are undeveloped and will probably remain undeveloped for perpetuity. And so we're proposing along that segment here to include a multi-use path off the roadway for bikes and peds. So those are some concepts that we're playing with. I want to get into a little bit more of the specifics of the protected bike lane concept that we're proposing. This is an example from Austin, Texas, where they did the same thing. They went from an on-street bike lane to a protected bike lane. And these are just some images showing this raised curb on the far left image. It's got openings for the side streets. At the major intersections, this shows in the middle photo how the bike lane is on the street and then comes up onto the curb area. And then the photo to the right shows at the intersection itself where the bikes and the peds basically share the curbed area to make that crossing. And then past the intersection, the bikes go back down into the roadway. So that's kind of one of the concepts and one of the ideas that we're looking at. I didn't show an image of it, but what we're kind of also looking at is maybe at a couple of the key intersections where there's a lot of lot more traffic and pedestrian and potentially bike use, looking at a protected intersection design, which the city is now considering or implementing on part of their Grant Road project. So this last slide here just shows kind of a preliminary layout that our consultants have developed. There's not much to look at here other than the three lanes of traffic in blue, sidewalks in the brown color, and then on the northern side of this image, on the upper part of the image, it shows where the bikes get pulled off of the street, approaching Cardinal. They cross Cardinal, they stay up above the curb, and then go behind the bus shelter, and then eventually come back onto the street, past the bike, past the bus shelter. Again, this is just a very preliminary design. It hasn't been worked out. The intersection itself of Cardinal, as I said, we're going to be looking at potentially a protected intersection that has a whole lot more design elements that make it easier and safer for bikes in particular to cross that intersection. But I just wanted to kind of get some of these ideas out in front of you all and to open it up for questions to see if anybody would like to talk about some of these design concepts, or if you have personal knowledge of this corridor, I would be really happy to hear from you as well. And then, as I mentioned earlier, we're going to be doing formal outreach through our consultant team later on down the road, probably towards the summer or fall. So there are going to be other opportunities for public input, and I might even bring this back to the Complete Streets Committee if Patrick is so willing at a later point in time. So I'll be quiet now, and if there's any questions or comments, I'd like to open those up for a few more minutes now.
Excellent. Thanks, Jonathan. Questions or comments? Charlie?
Hey. Just a comment. I just want to state what seems really obvious, and that is like awesome support for the idea of a bike lane moving out of the path of the bus stops and also, you know, up onto that raised curb level in heavier traffic areas. I think maybe it's different in other cities, but the city buses here do not, they put on a blinker and they start moving. So it seems like a really great idea to move that bike lane behind the bus stop. Thank you.
Great, thanks.
Marshall.
Yeah, my question was sort of similar. These the bike lanes where it switches from off road to on road. And I don't think those have been used anywhere else in the city.
Not to my knowledge. Yes.
Is there any been, you mentioned that they have it, that your example showed it out in Austin. Is there any studies to show how well that design works, especially because it, you know, I think it would easily confuse drivers. Why are they on the sidewalk? Why are they off? Why are they on the road type thing?
Yeah, I don't have any stats to kind of offhand that I can relate back about the Austin, although there is some information about that I can look into and get back to you on, Marshall. You know, this design is one of many, many designs that are out there and available for traffic engineers and designers to implement with roads across America. A group called NACTO, the National Association of City Transportation Officials, has guidelines and diagrams and options for all different kinds of bike facilities on all different kinds of roads and all different kinds of situations. So today's designers have a whole slew of options that are legal and allowable and practiced across the country, including this idea of putting a bike facility up onto the curb and behind the curb, so to speak, as opposed to in the road. So the efficacy or the safety benefits of those, I'll have to kind of get back to you with numbers, but it's one of many options that are being practiced today across the country. We just haven't utilized those yet within the city of Tucson or certainly Pima County yet. And so it is a new feature. And one of the concerns that have been raised, and I've taken this slideshow to the Bicycle Advisory Committee as well, and one of their concerns is visibility for cyclists by, say, right-turning vehicles. So if you bring that facility too far back behind the curb to the point that it may not be as visible as a cyclist out in the street, the cars will make a right turn and they'll be expecting maybe a pedestrian to make a crossing, but they won't be expecting a bicycle moving at a little higher speed. And so they've raised that concern, and that's why we've talked about and why we're starting to talk about the idea of a protected intersection to basically make sure that the cyclists are a lot more visible. But I think you know, the strategy of putting the bikes behind the curb or up upon the curb and behind the bus shelters, kind of comes from this, I think, a generalized understanding that, you know, bike lanes alone out on the roads aren't going to attract and be used by all users of all ages and all abilities. It might be okay for the spandex crowd, but, you know, for kids and families and anybody who's not comfortable, they're just not going to ride out there along a 6-lane busy roadway. So part of the intent is to make it more friendly for those users.
I think I do remember, I do kind of knew one example where it switches from the road to the sidewalk, and that's that traffic circle on the completed section of North Cole just below Sunrise.
Yeah, that's a good, yeah, you just remembered that. Yeah, that's a new project that we just did a couple years ago, and that's exactly what we did there. So I guess we do have one example in the county I can hang my head on. But your point is really valid, and let you know it's what drivers are comfortable with and expecting, and you don't want to throw something that's really counter to what most people are expecting out there as more than maybe a demonstration project. But that's something we're going to look at really closely, and our engineers are going to have to evaluate and decide what's going to be, you know, the most appropriate that does the best for most users. So good point.
Thank you.
Yep. Thanks, Marshall. Ruth.
Question, what's the length of this stretch of road that you got the grant for?
It's a little over a mile. I want to say 1.3 miles, perhaps.
So why? What's unique about this part of Valencia that you're just going to put protected bike? You're going to put protected bike lanes in for a mile. The rest of Valencia has got nothing, right?
No, that's not true, Ruth. But the eastern part of Valencia, so east of Mission Road, is mostly within city limits. And the county actually, with the city, did that project some 10 years ago and implemented on-street bike lanes and sidewalks along that stretch of Valencia Road all the way to the interstate. West of this project, specifically from Comunidad de la Terra all the way out to the intersection of Ajo Highway, the county has widened and put in bike lanes along that entire stretch of roadway. It's another 10 miles or so. And then on part of that, the most recent project that we did actually had an off-street path along the southern side of Valencia Road as well. So the impetus for this project was really kind of multifaceted. One is there's some pretty serious congestion for traffic that's happening at the intersection of Mission Road in particular. So there's a need to sort of address some capacity issues there. And then secondly, with the emphasis on complete streets and active modes and bikes and peds, the federal government grant level, it was an opportunity for us to sort of get a complete streets project in the hopper and not just build a typical 6-lane divide roadway that doesn't address bikes and peds. So I'm aware, I understand your question, and I think I know where you're getting at with kind of doing the bells and whistles on this 1.3 miles, but it's basically the next phase of a multi-phased 20 plus year county improvement to Valencia Road from the interstate all the way out to Ajo Highway. And if we can get this in here, it sort of sets the stage for what could happen potentially to the east and west in future years with future funding.
Okay, well, good. Thank you for correcting me. But I'm concerned that people will see protected bike lanes that are limited in length. And I don't like dumping people into road conditions that they're not expecting when they see good in one section, it's this, and then they get they bike a little farther and they don't have that any longer. So that makes me a little nervous. But given what you're talking about, you got to start somewhere.
Yeah, and just I'll add one more thing before Zach. You know, we're also trying to address the neighborhoods that live just north and south of this project. So Valencia is a tough project in that it's, you know, a highway for people who live in Star Valley and further west and commute all the way into the city 15, 20 miles. But it's also home to people who live just north and south of Valencia Road along this corridor. And so anything we can do to make it easier for people who live close to Valencia Road to walk and bike along that stretch of road, to me, is a benefit to those communities, as well as providing some balance with the through capacity for a regional roadway as well. So I think Zach was next.
Yes. Thanks, Jonathan. I'm just curious, with the mixed use path that you referenced. Has there been any thought of what type of materials go into creating that mixed use path? Is it just typical pavement, or is it more rustic? Or I'm just curious about the how that would work with both pedestrians and bicyclists.
Zach, I'm sorry, my 5-year-old interrupted me during the beginning of your presentation. If you could just recap the first part of what you said, and I'll answer you right now.
No worries. I was just asking if there had been any thought or what type of materials would be used in a mixed use path, whether it be pavement or concrete or more something more rustic.
Rustic. Okay. Well, typically the county and the city provide asphalt paving for multi-use paths. That's what you see mostly along the river park systems, along the loop, along most multi-use paths. It doesn't mean it has to be that way. But if you're interested in more of a rustic feel, there are a couple sections of county river parks that were experimented with some other materials that were a little bit more naturalistic. The challenge is you need to make it ADA compatible, so it needs to be for, it needs to hold up, it needs to be permanent, and it needs to be for wheelchairs. So there's not a lot of options there, but do you have a suggestion now?
No, I'm good with ADA compliance. I just was curious about what that would look like. So thanks.
All right. Thanks, Zach.
Jennifer, then Sophia.
Hi, Jonathan. I'd just like to share. I like the idea. I know how congested that area is. And maybe for maybe Ruth and everybody else, when you go to the West, there's not all of those different shopping venues. I've seen this in Mexico. I've seen it where it's a protected concrete and then it goes up on the sidewalk and it comes back down. It goes up on the sidewalk when it goes over bridges and things like that. So I've seen this and it works. And on high speed areas that I've been in Puerto Vallarta. So, and then the path changes depending on what's going on around it, if there's more housing or if there's more driveways and things like that. So, this is a good idea, I think.
Great. Thanks, Jennifer.
Sophia.
I think I may have missed this, but was there a reason why the bike path is not also on the south end, or is it on both the north and south side of the road?
The bike
The
facility,
for yeah, the two-way bike
the
facility.
two, if you look on the map, and I could bring it up again, but there's a section of the 1.3 miles between
Cardinal.
Westover Road and Mission Road that is mostly the Tohono O'odham Nation, and it's undeveloped along that segment. So it makes sense to put it there where it's basically natural undisturbed desert. The south side of that segment, which is also TO lands and some homes, is more developed, and so there's not room, frankly, to put in a multi-use path within the right of way. One of the things that we did when we put together the grant proposal and that we're trying to adhere to is using only the existing right of way, which is 150 feet for the most part, but it provides some constraints, what we can and can't do along the side of the road. And basically, there's just not enough right of way, and mostly there's some houses and other development on the south side of the road that preclude putting in a multi-use path along that segment. Further to the west, there's just a zillion businesses and driveways that make it really difficult to put in a multi-use path because of all those intersections and the potential for conflicts there. So we're putting in the multi-use path where it makes sense and where there's room for it. And we would put it in elsewhere if it was, but it's becoming an urbanized roadway. And what you don't see today is there's a number of projects that have been approved and developed and are going to be building along this segment that aren't there today. So it's going to get even more congested and more commercialized over the coming years.
So to wrap up then, do you want to just talk about what the next steps are, or if you're going to come back to the CSCC at all in the future on this?
I mean, like I said, the project is sort of in the initial stages. We haven't even started the formal outreach yet. We do have a project website, and we're going to be putting out a project survey, kind of like the one we did for the Southwest area study, which garnered about 400 responses. So we got a lot of great feedback from folks about the Southwest Area Study, which was a broader study. We're going to do the same process for getting input here. That's coming up, like I said, in the next coming months. I don't have a date for you right now, but I will certainly plan to come back to the Complete Streets when we have something maybe to look at that's more tangible. And then I'd love to get some more feedback from this group on the designs. One thing I didn't mention tonight really quick is with the sidewalk plan, I didn't show you or point it out, but one of the things that I asked for recently and that we're doing is providing connections to the sidewalks to those businesses that are along that corridor, because there's not a lot of sidewalk connectivity. There's no sidewalks for one thing, but on the sections that do have sidewalks, there's no connectivity to allow you to walk from the sidewalk to the front door of the EG's or the Starbucks or wherever else. So we're putting in those connections along that whole corridor. And yeah, I would like to get some feedback and plan to bring back to the committee at a later date. I don't know what date that's going to be yet, Tani.
Okay. That sounds good. Thank you so much.
Yeah. Thanks for all the feedback. Great conversation. So.
Excellent. Okay. 6 month co-chair confirmation. We have one volunteer who is Marshall. And it last call for anybody else wanting to step up. Every 6 months, there's an opportunity. Okay, so Marshall would take over for Miranda, I believe. Is that correct, Miranda? And it's not to preclude Miranda from attending our agenda meetings. So we just need to have it. You can just close your ears, Marshall. Anybody have any concerns about Marshall? It's a valiant thing to volunteer to be a co-chair. So that is with the current co-chairs. If you can just, we now have agreement that Marshall will be our new co-chair. And we can do a motion.
Yep. I move to approve Marshall as the new co-chair.
And I second, that.
Welcome, Marshall. So Patrick will be in touch about the agenda meeting that will be before our next commission meeting.
Very excited.
Very excited. We are too. Okay. Thank you for that. So now we have CSCC Hub. I'll just go through again. This is to connect the CSCC with the various subgroups. I mean, relevant transportation-related commissions. And yeah, Colleen is, people are saying thank you. Thank you, Miranda, for serving. I think it was two terms. Yes. So thank you so much.
Thank you, Miranda. And thank you, Marshall, for stepping up and volunteering. So very cool.
Yeah.
We'll miss you. You were great, Miranda.
Yeah. Very helpful. Anything you want to say, Miranda?
I just really enjoyed doing it. I feel like I learned a lot, and I appreciate Tani, Colleen, and Patrick for being such great supports. And yeah, I'm excited for Marshall.
Awesome. Thank you. Thank you both. And thank you for Sophia for continuing in your co-chair role. Okay, so we'll go through these 2 minute updates, but I don't believe so. Independent Oversight and Accountability Commission. I don't believe Jim is on the line. Anybody else have the update for that? Park Tucson, Jill.
Hi, everybody. It's kind of a continuation of the same, like doing outreach about rate and meter hour changes and trying to get staffed up for enforcement. And that's all. Is there anything that anybody would want me to take back to a Park Tucson meeting? That's it for me. Thank you.
Next is Pedestrian Advisory Committee. Tariq is not here. Anyone else involved in that commission? Okay. Tucson Transit Advisory Committee, TTAC, Riley.
I don't have any updates. I wasn't actually at the last meeting. I couldn't make it. Our next meeting is Monday, April 1st. and they're 3 to 5 downtown if anybody's ever interested. They're only in person, so anyway, I don't know if anybody has questions or stuff for me to bring to the committee. Let me know.
Excellent. Bicycle Advisory Committee, Sophia.
It's an empty seat right now, but I know Ward 1 is looking at 2 contenders for it.
Good. We did get a new appointment from the BAC. Sophia is now representing Ward 1. Once we get the loyalty oath, that person will be seated at the next meeting.
Okay, and then Commission on Disability Issues. Zach.
Hi. Yes. So the commission continues its work on Sunran this past month, and I don't think I clarified that for those who might not know. Sunran is kind of like an offshoot component of SunTran. It provides door-to-door service for those people with disabilities, where the public busing system, the regular. Just buses are inaccessible due to where they live or their type of disability. So Sunvan is starting a comprehensive operational analysis, and they do have a public survey out for service improvements, and there will be multiple public meetings over the next month on that. So if you yourself use Sunvan, or, you know, a loved one or friend who does, I'm just going to pop the link in the chat here. And there's a banner with the survey link kind of at the top of the page. Thanks.
Great. Okay. Now, wrap up next steps, future agenda items. So DTM staff and project updates, Patrick.
Yeah, I did want to respond to a question from Sophia in the chat since I didn't address it during Jonathan's presentation. So it's a broad agenda topic. We'll cover it now. She had asked, will updates to the right-of-way affect a project's possibilities like this Valencia one? I assume this is in reference to the major streets and routes plan where we're looking at narrowing some of our future rights-of-way for public improvements. Jonathan referenced that they had 150 feet of right-of-way on this project, which I imagine is a function of having an established MS&R, so they were able to reserve that right-of-way for this project. In the future, if we reduce our MS&R, it will constrain some of our rights-of-way and limit some of those abilities, but that's okay because we're really looking to establish rights-of-way that are adequate to accommodate the cross-sections identified in the Complete Streets Street Design Guide. So the impetus for the street, the Major Streets and Routes Plan was to reserve future right-of-way basically for road widenings, and we're really moving away from that philosophy and really prioritizing those modernizations, which is what we're updating the MS&R to reflect.
Thanks for that.
But we won't have many 150-foot swaths through the middle of the city. I can promise you that.
Mm-hmm. Any other DTM updates?
Yeah, just quick update on the financials. Let you know we've got our latest revenues. We have about $24.3 million that have been collected through Proposition 411 for the safety program. Our expenditures have been pretty minimal, maybe $1 million or $2 million. So we are sitting on quite a bit of cash for this program right now. And this is really in anticipation of standing up the collector program and getting that project layering in place. So we are looking to get a firm under contract to do some conceptual designs on 16 corridors, which were the ones that the IOEC approved. We should have them working on that probably in the next week or two and be prepared to present at the meeting either next month or the following month. Other projects, about 13% of the city right now is either under contract for repaving or has already been repaved under Proposition 411. So making huge progress on that. So if there is an asphalt movement in your neighborhood, there probably will be soon. Jim DeGrood, my hat's off to him, is doing yeoman's work to get that done and rolled out. And big capital projects moving. The next big one is going to be Grant Road, basically from El Vernon Road to Swan. That should be starting active construction next month. So we have somebody under contract and that one is moving. We had our kickoff meeting for First Avenue as well. We have identified the members of the Citizens Task Force and we are now actively appointing them. So we should be out in public on that project probably in the next month or two.
Okay. Future agenda items. We've got a list, Drexel Bridge, pedestrian safety letter review and approval, project development subcommittee report and checklist, and any other requests. That's in our list at the moment that we try to, as the facilitators and co-chairs and Patrick, decide what's most urgent and timely and then plug those in as well as anything else that gets suggested. So other thoughts about agenda items for the future?
I think I'll add an understanding of RFFBs to the speed humps category. Okay. It's not as urgent as the things we've been talking about, but I would still like to understand their usefulness.
Mm-hmm. Good. Others? Okay. Anytime it occurs to you, middle of the night, you can just shoot Patrick an email and we'll put it in the hopper. Okay. And then the last thing is the personal Complete Streets experiential opportunity for the month. For April, the upcoming month will be try to use public transit at least once, then reflect on your experience, how it could be improved. And Sophia, did you want to say anything about that?
What would I say?
I don't know. I think you might have had the idea.
No,
anyway,
it's your idea, Tani.
Oh, it's my idea. Okay. Sorry. Well, it's just, you know, sometimes we get together for a little field trip and sometimes it can be just a personal, you know, like when you're out and about, you might go see the, you know, whatever out there that is relevant, and you can just within the course of the month try to do that thing. So for any of you, if you have a specific, you know, Complete Streets feature you think people should go see or whatever, we can add it to this list so that you can all just, you know, as you have an inclination or not, you can do that. Any final comments, questions before we wrap up tonight? Good meeting.
Hi, it's Jennifer. It's Jennifer. Yeah. Just as far as that bus field trip, just from your house, how long does it take you to walk to the nearest bus stop? And imagine if your neighbor, that was their only way to get to where they were going. Is it too far? One of those things to think about.
Good. It's very, very specific. Okay. Maybe we can actually share back the next meeting, just put how long it is, the answer to that one question at least. Okay, well, thanks everyone. Enjoy the rest of, or most of April before we see you again. Have a nice night.
Thank you.
Thanks everyone.
Good night.